T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Has the puck. Here's Kopitar with an opportunity, and he scores! The Kings captain, Anze Kopitar, the overtime hero for LA, and the Kings steal game 2, 5-4 final score.
He's come a long way from that dash 6 on February 13th against the Buffalo Sabres. There's hope for Anze Kopitar yet in his still blossoming NHL career. Welcome into Sabres Live. What a finish by LA's captain, who now has 3 overtime winners. And man, does he not like staying up late, because all 3 of his career playoff markers in extra time have happened in the opening 8.5 minutes. So thank you, Anze. It was a long night already. And what a game for the Kings. I would disagree, because I'm prone to do that, with the call saying that they stole game 2. They led 2-0, they led 3-1, they led 4-3, and they won the game 5-4. I think the Kings were full marks for the win last night.
You're absolutely right. You know what? They forced the Edmonton Oilers in making a lot of mistakes early. Look at the first goal. Evan Bouchard has the puck. He comes around the net. He throws it off the wall. Who is the guy that stops it at the blue line? It's Anze Kopitar. All the Edmonton Oilers players are thinking offense, offense, offense. Hey, we scored 7 goals last year, last game, you know, game 1. We were up 4-0. Let's do the same thing. No, he turns the puck over, gets it to Kempe. Kempe scores the second goal by Kempe. What a beautiful deflection that was. But they took advantage of a sloppy Edmonton Oilers. And look, that's not easy to do. And then when the Oilers make it 2-1 with Kulak, it's Drew Doughty. I told you, if the Kings win this series and in 7 games, it's going to be Drew Doughty getting 7 or 8 points. And he's the one that took off, right? He's like, I'm going on a breakaway at the end of the first period. And he made it 3-1. Look, they didn't steal it. They earned it, because they put the Oilers in a tough position. Although the Oilers came back really strong. Talbot made some big saves to keep it close, and then they were able to get in an OT. I didn't think Stuart Skinner was great either. I thought he was okay, but not great.
Well, his quote was, luck wasn't on my side tonight. So whatever.
Hey,
no, he didn't specify gender.
Okay.
So he said luck was
very Canadian of him.
Was it?
Let's keep it generic, but yeah, I don't like when you get beat
center ice under the faceoff dot.
Yeah, no, exactly. I don't like when goalies get, especially at this time of year, like clear sight shot, right? When you're set and you see the puck, like even the first goal by Kempe, the Kopitar overtime goal is a laser.
It's a pretty great laser.
It's a really good shot, but I'm thinking, you lose the game if you give up that goal. You win the game if you make that save, right? That's how I see playoffs being so tight.
Yes, and with it, now the series is 1-1, and I'm still not sure whether you will get the full point total from Doughty that you are projecting, but I was going to text you repeatedly that you were getting your Drew Doughty night last night, and he ended up just shy of 30 minutes, and again, that's a little different than some of the other measures that we were talking about. I was focused on how Andrew Burnett was using his lineup top to bottom against Vancouver. I think when you look at Vegas last night and their win over Dallas, again, look at how Cassidy is using this full Vegas roster. And we can say full for the first time because Alec Martinez played last night, which meant they were at the highest end of their cap possibilities, if the cap actually mattered, in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And look, the ice time was amazing. There was three guys, I think, over 20. But even, again, like Pietrangelo was right at 22 minutes, even though he's the workhorse. Jack was over 20. Jack hits another artificial milestone in the sense of it's not historic, so to speak, but he's the fastest U.S.-born player to 30 playoff points in his NHL career. And what an absolutely amazing answer by Jack and the Golden Knights after Robertson had put them up. That pass that Eichel makes on what is like a breakaway, and then he turns it into a 2-on-1 or 1-on-0 to give it to Marchessault, just outstanding play.
Yeah, Jack Eichel sold it. He sold it because he also made the goalie bite, but he protected the puck from the back checker while selling, I'm going to go to the back end, and knowing that Marchessault was coming in on the right side. I always wonder in those situations if a player calls for the puck, but I like this thing that Marchessault trusts Jack enough to say, I don't need to say anything. He's going to know that I'm there to make the play. Like, they're great hockey players. They don't know. They don't have to call, but Jack gets the empty net goal. This game was another one of those low shooting type of game, like not as low as we had Vancouver, Nashville the night before, and the New York Islanders against Carolina, but it featured good goaltending. Jake Ottinger made a couple of the save on Dadonov. There was a couple other saves. Logan Thompson made some good saves.
Well, you probably didn't like the Hanifin goal.
I didn't like the Hanifin goal because I felt like he retreated and went to a bad positioning. It's not so much that it was a weak goal. I just think he executed it in a bad way. But like I said, and we talk Samsonov and the Leafs, it doesn't matter if you make five, grade A saves in a game. It's the goals that you give up in the playoffs that really matter. You know, at 1-1, can't give up that Hanifin goal late in the second to make it 2-1. It eventually was the game-winning goal. At 1-0 for Toronto, Samsonov can't give up that goal to Trent Frederick to make it 1-1. If Frederick went short side from 40 feet out, a wrist shot, like, you just can't have that happen. And Toronto's all mad. There should have been a penalty called on McAvoy. Should have been a penalty call on Marchand, and or at least a coincidental minors, Marchand and Bertuzzi, that would have negated that. You still got to play and make the save. And then the end, that Samsonov didn't.
Do we have the real audio of the Leafs complaining? And did it sound exactly like that in that tone?
Let's ask Darren Dreger later at 12:30. He can make a really good, kind of impersonation of good complainers. He's really good
when he's not eating fish eyeballs.
Yes, that too. He didn't have any. I was working with him last night, though. He didn't have any fish eyeballs, which was good. And good old Dregs, was saying, the Leafs are not happy about it right now.
He's 23 minutes away warming up in the Sabres live bullpen is Darren Dreger. Of course, Shana Goldman is coming up here immediately after we very quickly gloss even further over the Leafs and Bruins last night. What is your last takeaway from Boston taking a 2-1 series lead?
So obviously Brad Marchand had a big part of the game, and his response, that goal that made it 3-2, is a beautiful goal. Everybody in Toronto was talking about Mitch Marner. He got his point. Did it matter? No, right? He played 23 and then over 23
Why
minutes.
Does it not matter? It mattered.
No, it mattered, but I'm just saying they didn't win. In the end, they lost the game. So, they really miss William Nylander. And that's the biggest thing with the Leafs right now, is that they have Tavares, Matthews, Marner playing. And in game one, and none of them really were there. In game two, Matthews put the team on his back. In game three, it's Marner that was the better of the three, but they're missing an added element. I feel like they're missing Nylander and what he can bring to the team. Domi was better. Bertuzzi was noticeable, but it's Marchand in the air in the end and McAvoy that get the best of the Leaf because they got in their heads a little bit. But what about when Domi and Swayman like got... Domi bumped Swayman on his way to the bench at a commercial break. Like, that is typical. Like, I look at it as a goalie's point of view, and I'm saying Swayman could have avoided the contact. Swayman didn't care. He wanted to let, Domi know, I'm not backing down. I'm going to go straight to the bench, and Domi gave him a shot. And in the end, that's when the game really started for the Boston Bruins, because in the first part of the game, there was really nothing going. That game started right there.
Amherst continue prepping for the start of their playoff series, and that is going to happen on Friday night. That would be tomorrow at Blue Cross Arena, 7 o'clock. Look forward to seeing you there. Obviously, it's game two on Sunday. I have a quick question before we get to Shayna as it pertains to the Amherst. And yeah, it's not playoff specific at all, but it is surrounding their head coach, Seth Appert, who talked yesterday about the fact that he's looking forward to having, a chat with Lindy Ruff beyond text message. And I was wondering whether you think, like, it's more your, I guess, opinion couched with a bit of knowledge. Yeah. But, like, if you're Seth Appert, this is not talking to Seth about it, and he did kind of not dismiss, but he didn't dive into the topic wholeheartedly yesterday when he was asked about it. He's like, my focus is obviously here, right?
Yeah.
Meaning the Amherst. But I'm going to ask you, if you were Seth Appert, would you take an assistant coaching job in the NHL at this point in your career?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. And that's why I think that I have Seth's name. And I'm not saying that he is definitely, would be on Lindy's staff. There's a lot of different options that obviously would be presented to Seth moving forward in this organization and outside the organization, because he's a really good coach, but he needs NHL experience. He hasn't gotten any NHL experience, and being able to do it with Lindy Ruff would be a really good starting point for Seth to get that NHL experience. I think of Brian McCutchen when I was with the Rochester Americans, coached the Amherst for 4-5 years before Randy Cunningworth took over. But Cutchy got basically elevated to Buffalo to go on Lindy's staff. And what was so great for my type of generation of players is we had all played under McCutchen in Rochester. And then we had that familiar face in Buffalo, knowing that he knew us, we knew him, and we felt comfortable, and it moved forward. I think Seth is in that same boat. But not only would that be good for the organization, I think it would be really good for Seth Appert to get that NHL. He's gotten a couple of the NHL experience, come in and coach the Sabres when Don had some illness and missed a few games. But I think for Seth Appert, it would be a really good step forward in his coaching career, going from, college to the National Team Development Program to AHL, and now go to NHL in a, keep graduating. Regardless of the title, you keep graduating to the best league.
Rochester and Syracuse, again, it's a habit at this time of year, and the Amherst try to take game one tomorrow night. Looking forward to being with Don Stevens and with you at Blue Cross Arena. 7 o'clock start time for that one. It's a best of five with the first two, and if necessary, game five happening in Rochester. Shayna Goldman has adjusted her schedule kindly to join us here on this Thursday. Shayna's with The Athletic, of course, and regular on Fridays on Sabres Live. Shayna, welcome in. We are being bumped tomorrow because of the NFL draft, so we're trying to maximize our Thursday show as much as possible today. Kind of dovetailing off of our quick discussion there on Seth Appert and whether he eventually joins Lindy Ruff's staff, which remains to be seen. When you look at the change of Lindy Ruff taking over the Sabres once again behind the bench, what do you see and know in Lindy's resume beyond the wins, beyond the longevity, that could, in fact, allow Buffalo to do what they are desperately needing here, and that is have Lindy Ruff guide them back to the postseason?
Yeah, when I look at this hire, I think of Lindy Ruff less as a tactician, more of a people manager, right? To me, that's his best strength. And you could kind of see that from the Devils locker room the last couple seasons. Where it kind of all clicks to me is how it ties in similar to that Devils team last year, right? You look at the Devils last year and they made the playoffs and they progressed more than everyone expected. And it was off of their rush game, right? We talked about, is that enough for them? And we had all those big questions, but that was the stepping stone for them to break through and turn the corner, was to thrive off that. You look at the Sabres last year and go, okay, what were their strengths? It was their rush game. Did they need to add more to it and round out their approach? Absolutely. But we knew at like their core, this was a really good team in transition. So if you can try to harness what Lindy helped the Devils become in 22-23. Maybe you see that potential here because it's what they got away from this season. They got away from those offensive strengths. I think the key to it is going to be really good tacticians on his bench, because we saw the difference in New Jersey when he got Andrew Burnett as his associate coach to help the offense click versus someone like Mark Greinke. So that's the big piece of the puzzle missing. But I think that's where it all comes together here.
So when I looked at the numbers, though, I didn't feel like the Devils dropped so much offensively last year in the expected goals department. They did. But obviously, you know, Jack Hughes was hurt. Dougie Hamilton was hurt. There's a lot of numbers that will come down. Lindy, I sat with Lindy yesterday for this show on an interview, and he mentioned the Sabres, their rush, when he took away the rush, right? How can, like, he make sure that they still get the rush? Because we pointed it out all season. When a team sat in the middle of the ice, a 1-3-1, the Sabres got nothing.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Devils against those type of situations, the 1-3-1, were they able to break through? Is this a strength of maybe what Lindy or what he's learned from being in New Jersey and then bring it to Buffalo?
I think the key to the Devils getting through anyone's defense was their speed, right? And we saw that last year in particular. They came into the season and everybody was on their heels against them and didn't expect the speed. And when the league started to adapt to the Devils did struggle a bit, and then they found their footing again to rely on that. I think they, at their best, the Sabres, might be able to mimic that. The key, I think, for them is going to be not losing that against a really good forechecking team. And that's what made that Devils-Kane series so interesting, because you had two totally different styles of play really coming together. So I wonder if that's going to be the difference. It's not going to be how are you going to get through opposing defenses. It's how are you going to, like, hold your own against a team that has a little bit more tenacity. Like, how are you going to add that sandpaper without taking away from the speed and skill that you should be leaning into? And I think that's something a lot of teams struggle with, right? Because then they think of toughness in different ways, when I think that that's the element of toughness you need.
At the end of it all, every coach most often only succeeds with above average goaltending. So I asked you to take that out of the equation and just personally, from your standpoint, and maybe assuming that every team is different, although many players say that it really doesn't change that much when you go from team to team. Like, what do you value in a head coach in today's NHL? Because, Marty, I was fascinated yesterday when you put Lindy on the spot and asked him offense or defense, mm-hmm. what matters most. And I dare say that, oh my gosh, we've actually made progress in the NHL, because he did not immediately blurt out defense. He defaulted to it eventually, but he took his time and
he went to the other thing. He went middle. He said, well, defense, he goes, you can't win if you can't score. And that's really what he went down to after a little bit. Yeah.
So Shayna, what do you value then in a coach today in the NHL?
Yeah, I know. It's funny. Like you say, it comes down to save percentage a lot of the times for goalies. And sometimes that's what exposes a coach, right? It might not be what gets them fired, but it exposes them enough to make a change. And sometimes they just take the brunt of it and take the blame for it. So it really depends. I think being able to adapt to today's game is the key to being a good coach in the NHL. Because listen, we all know coaches get recycled left, right, and sideways. And it's not always a bad thing if you can learn and be different. If you're going to hire Gerard Gallant 10 times and be surprised when, you know, young players aren't getting key moments and, you know, he doesn't make adjustments on the fly in games, it's like, well, you know, what's the definition of insanity? But other coaches can change on the fly. I look at someone like John Tortorella, and I've made it clear I'm a Tortorella fan, but it's because of the way he's changed his approach. And him and Mike Sullivan said it. I believe this was a story written by the great Allison Lucan when she did a series on the Blue Jackets front office and coaching staff. And it was how the two of them in an offseason realized they need to think about how offense is created in this league. And they went through every goal and they were like, wait, we need to go bigger and look at scoring chances. You wouldn't think as John Tortorella as a numbers guy or even Mike Sullivan, but they became it in their own way, right? And it's not just that you have to rely on data, but you have to learn what works today and then put your own spin on it. So that is the key to being a successful coach for me.
Okay. How does, and I'm going to move on to the NHL and the playoffs quickly because I want to talk about one of Duffer's favorite team, the Nashville Predators, and they were able to tie it up 1-1. In their series against the Vancouver Canucks. No Thatcher Demko. So how does the Vancouver Canucks, Rick Tocchet, able to overcome what is likely Thatcher Demko not available for round one and potentially for round two and more? Like, we don't know yet, week to week. But how does Vancouver overcome the loss of Thatcher Demko against the Nashville Predators?
First and foremost, I think he needs to settle the waters, right? Because you watch the beginning of that game. To me, it felt like everybody was overcorrecting. And we see this happen all the time. And sometimes you see it from a goalie, right? If their team's not doing anything, a goalie gets out of the crease a little bit more and is like, I'll do everything myself. You just need to calm everyone down and be like, it's okay. We've done this before. So that Hughes mistake on the first shift, it just felt like he was overcorrecting and everything kind of spiraled from there. I think it's keeping in mind how they did this in the regular season without Demko to end the year. And it was so interesting because we talk about the Canucks and we go, well, they're power play merchants and the shooting percentage and the save percentage and the 5-on-5 numbers underwhelmed. But that end of the season, you saw their 5-on-5 numbers in both directions improve. They didn't always have the goaltending, but they were doing everything right below the surface to encourage more sustainable long-term results. That's what they have to lean into and remember, like, hey, we've made these adjustments before. We've done this before, so we can do it again.
By the way, Marty, we didn't delve into this on the heels of the Predators' Game 2 win, in which they blocked a ridiculous number of shots and were seemingly willing to play it the way it played out. I think a lot of players after are like, we might need to do more at the other end. But yeah. Remember how much we talked about Dakota Joshua after Game 1?
Yeah.
How about his miss in Game 2 when he was on the doorstep? He got around Saros, and then it was like the Pominville thing from years ago. It wasn't a double hit, but it was like the puck stuck to his blade, and when he went to slam it home, it slammed directly off the post, and then he was standing there like, what just happened? And then the puck gets, and he was literally like, after the whistle, he's just like looking up at the screen while still on the ice going, how did that not go in? Crazy moment, but of course, I'm only bringing it up, Shayna, because you know I'm a big Dakota Joshua fan, so...
As you should be. Look at what he's done this year. That third line all year has had an identity for them, no matter how they've trotted it out, right? Like when it was Bluger, Garland, Joshua, they were crushing it. Now, obviously, in a perfect world, Elias Lindholm is not your 3C, right? Like he should be top six. But on a line with Joshua and Garland, it's kind of like, all right, let him cook a little bit because you have a line that can play the game different ways. And they can, at the very least, sustain offensive zone time and just disrupt opponents. Like, at minimum, that's something for a third line.
Yeah. We haven't talked about the Rangers-Capitals series because we've only had time for three games a day. So there's been a lot of things. And we have four games. We get three and we're like, sorry, Matt Damon. You'll be on the next show, right? And that's what it is.
There's two games tonight, and we don't even have a show tomorrow.
So I know. Ovi, like even this coach, Spencer Carberry, said, well, Ovi's not played to the level we want him to. And, you know, the Washington Capitals are in an 0-2 hole right now going home. So, you win your games at home, whatever. But how does Washington get Alex Ovechkin going? Because they don't have a lot of offense to start with. And if Ovi doesn't score or produce, they're not going anywhere.
So I think step one is managing the matchups, right? Like, this is what we're going to be talking about, is every series shifts arenas. For Ovechkin, game one, he went up against the Zibanejad deadline. It did not go well for him. And he went up against Fox and Lindgren a lot. Didn't go well for him. If you're Washington, you put him up against Jacob Trouba every single shift and you say, try against Gustafsson, Trouba. The other part of it is getting him against that fourth line. Barkley Gaudreau's numbers aren't terrible against Ovechkin, but someone like Matt Rempe's numbers were really bad in game two, which is why you saw the Rangers in certain shifts in the third period, the last two games, you know, throwing Wemberg on the fourth line, throwing Trocheck on the fourth line to defend a lead, because that's an area they could be exposed. Because you're looking at it right now and everyone's defending Ovechkin, right? They're blocking a ton of his shots, which was this year in the regular season, I think 33% of his shots were blocked in all situations of his attempts, which is above his career high, I think, which is a career average of 28%. And then he's missing the net too, because everyone's getting sticks in the lanes. Like, he's the obvious target to go after. So you have to go for the softer matchups.
There are six teams right now that are boasting, I'll use that term loosely, a save percentage above 900. Only Tampa is losing their series with such numbers. So as it pertains to the Rangers and the Capitals, and it's Marty and I have talked off air a lot about this. It's been a strange year for the Capitals goaltending, just in, you know, the lack of presence, if you will, from Darcy Kemper. But like, how have you viewed the goaltending so far? And if you were Washington, would you be thinking of changing here?
Nope, not at all.
No,
no. I like Kemper. I feel like Kemper was someone who took some heat even with the Avalanche. Like, oh, look, they managed with, you know, average goaltending in the postseason because he was injured. And it kind of, everyone forgot how good he was all year and how good he's been in years past, like behind those Arizona teams. Mm-hmm. This year, it just wasn't it. And Charlie Lindgren has been building to this moment, and he was the better goalie in the second half of the season. I am not big on rotating goalies in the playoffs at all. So you pick your starter, you stick with him until their play forces you to change your mind. Like with the Islanders today, how they're switching from Varlamov to Sorokin. I get it, because you have a Vezina caliber guy as your 1B right now, and you need to change up the vibe somehow. You're down 2-0. But with Lindgren, it's not like, you know, Kemper's having that crazy great of a year that you feel like you should swap. Like, I think you stick with the goalie that helped you get here. He's one of the best goalies in the second half of the season. And honestly, it's not his fault that the series is going this way.
So, you know how sometimes on X you get a notification and it's somebody commenting on a post that may have been made like years ago, but somehow it comes back. So yesterday somebody went and tagged me to a post that was that Darcy Kemper had signed a 5-year deal with the Washington Capitals, and it's a picture of Kemper with the abs, right? And I think that person wanted to say, hey, Kemper should be playing, you know, next game or whatever. But I was so confused. I almost thought, like, wait, Kemper just signed an extension? I thought he had a big contract. Like, I was so confused about the whole thing. But it's almost forgotten that this is year two of a 5-year deal for Darcy Kemper.
That's why I brought it up.
Lindgren has been the guy, but I don't want to say if you go down 3-0, you almost have to tokenly just say, hey, Darcy, go ahead and play a game. But you have to think next year and the year after. That's complicated for Washington right now.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to see like what went wrong this year and try to figure out like, how do we turn this around? And hey, all credit to goalie coaches who can figure these things out. And, you know, sometimes players just have bad seasons, and it's a little bit more obvious when you're a goalie having that versus any other skater. They definitely need to get him back on track. And it's not like he was terrible this year. I mean, there was a lot of bad goaltending this year, and he definitely is not the one in that conversation relative to some of the other guys. But yeah, if it's you're down 3-0, you might have to, right? And that's a let's just change the vibe situation.
They may call Braden Holtby and bring him out of retirement if they're down 3-0 and say, hey, you did it once, do it again.
There you go.
I would be more inclined to do it now at 2-0. At 3-0, I would say, Charlie, it's been your year.
Sorry, Bessie, take a seat.
Yeah. Which $5 million plus goaltender is more likely to move in the offseason? Kemper or Aiden Hill?
Ooh, that's a good one. I feel like I feel like the answer is going to be Hill. I don't know if he moves, but I'm going to say it because Vegas has to clear cap space because that is what they do. They build up a ton of cap space and then they ship people out and it happens to be their goalies a lot of the time. And I know Hill has had injury problems and consistency issues this year a little bit. Who among us hasn't? But like, it's a little more glaring for him. And you have Logan Thompson right there who's cheaper. So I could see it. I feel like the Capitals maybe shouldn't focus on moving a goalie. Maybe just like focus on getting some more young talent, maybe a center or two, so everyone can slot a little better.
We are going to have Darren Dreger here like at the bottom of the hour. And he was in Winnipeg for game one and two. So I'm going to reserve the Winnipeg questions, like the Jets and stuff. But Alexander Georgiev, did he do enough in game two to say, oh, yeah, he's fine now? Like his game one performance was awful and now they're okay. Or was it still like, you never know what you're getting from him?
You don't know what you're getting from him. And I think his biggest problem has always been recovering from bad goals against. Like, I think of when the Rangers called up Shesterkin, and I remember there was a game in Edmonton. There was a game in Edmonton he allowed goals against, and I didn't think he was going to get the hook, and he did. And after that, he didn't play for a while, and it felt like he needed a reset. But I do give him a lot of credit recovering from that Scheifele goal, because when that happened, I literally was like, this game is going to be done right here. And it wasn't. Do you keep him on a short leash? You have to at this point, right? Like, you know that you have to. But I think he needs some help just cooling off a little bit more.
He's not the only one, obviously, but I had this text exchange with Marty weeks ago when Georgiev was plummeting. And I said, he has to show better demeanor here after these goals. It's not helpful for him or his teammates. And so I'm with you. Like the fact
he needs
that
a text from my dad, like the story I tell the game. I was with the Flyers in New Jersey. And I stayed on my knees and he called me after the game. He never really talked to me after games. That wasn't his style, but he called me after the game. It was never just stay on your knees after a goal. Get up, get up. That's all I say. I don't care if that was a good goal, bad goal, get up. Right. I was like, oh, maybe he needs a call Georgiev and let him know that.
Yeah, in why not?
I don't know.
He's got a win under his belt, and we will see what happens in game three of the series. It has been our pleasure to have you on a day earlier than usual, Shayna. Thank you. Enjoy the hockey this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic, Darren Dreger coming up next, our hockey insider from TSN. It's Sabres Live. Stay with us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.